Golf Smarter number 309, published on November 29, 2011, is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with now more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, please go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The perfect swing is the one you trust with Dr. Glenn Albaugh.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter, Glenn.
Hi, Fred.
It's great to have you. It's been a long time. You were on episode number 41 the first time, so it's been over 200 episodes, 200 weeks since the first time we spoke.
So is this number 301?
No, we're closer to 300 four or five.
Well, let's find out what has progressed during all of that time, you know, with winning the battle within, but... So that's why we're here.
Right. Okay. And when you first joined us, and I definitely want to bring this up again, you came out with a book that I just was fascinated with and really enjoyed, Winning the Battle Within, The Perfect Swing is the One You Trust. I mean, if you didn't write another word after that, if every golfer understood that concept, the perfect swing is the one you trust, they would just improve their game dramatically, wouldn't they?
Well, I think so. And... yes, I certainly do believe that. I think it's like one of the things that we'll talk about today is the perfect swing is the one you trust. It means that you're able to enter into this arena of automatic play. You know, Fred, the game is it's a non-thinking game. And so to play automatically means that we have to pass this this thinking brain and get into the part of our brain that really plays automatically.
And let's dig into that just a bit deeper. Please explain that, playing automatically.
Well, okay, I will. If we look at our brain, and in the front part of the brain, we have this thinking cortex, you know, the thinking brain, and it can only do one thing at a time. And it's the newest part of our brain. It hasn't gone through the evolution of time. And in other parts of our brain, and this is very rudimentary, if a physiological psychologist would listen to us now, they would probably turn their head and say, what is this? But it's part of our brain that where we have our motor memory, where all our skills are sitting. And then we also have a part of the brain that we call the automatic part. It's probably down in the cerebellum and brain cortex. And when we're playing our best golf, we move over in that part of the brain so that we're not thinking about how to swing, but we're seeing and feeling and allowing our intuition and imagination, you know, to come to fore, so that we can see shots, feel swings that match what we see, and then trust what we see and feel. And it's part of the brain, Fred, that works 1,000 times faster than the thinking brain, which can only do one thing at a time. And so the way that we practice and the way we work with our teachers and et cetera, what we want to do is eventually move into that part of the brain when we're playing so we can play, you know, without thinking. For example, so I might be walking down the fairway and I have a shot that's 165 yards and the pin is on the right. And for me these days, that's a 7-wood. And so I calculate, you know, the distance, the pin's on the right. Got some wind going a little bit left to right. I have a really nice lie. That's a 7-wood, and I'm going to cut it in there because I really like to get those cut shots. And immediately, I move out of my thinking brain over into my motor cortex, that part of the brain that people call it muscle memory, but it's really not. And muscles don't remember anything. We just have those skills sitting in that part of the brain. So I can go over there and I can see the shot and I can really feel the shot. Then I move down into my part of the brain that just does it. And so that part of the brain, as I said, you know, works 1,000 times faster. And we want to get into that part of the brain as often as we can.
How do we get that? It seems so simple to be able to do that when you're on the driving range, and yet so complicated when we're on the golf course.
Well, yes, one of the most important things we can learn to do is make the walk from the practice tee to the first tee productive. And that means then that the way that we practice, Fred, is very important in, of course, making that walk to the practice tee more productive. And these days, our culture, just our golf culture, just parades all kinds of information, not on your podcasts, but certainly because you take a different theme, but Golf Channel, Golf Digest, the stream of cash for golf professionals is to teach us swings. And when we teach somebody something, we give information, and we're still stuck in that thinking part of the brain that can only really do one thing at a time. So next time you practice, listeners, why don't you do this? Why don't you change targets on every shot? Why don't you use your full pre-shot routine? Why don't you change clubs in each shot? If you're sophisticated, you can change the shape of the shot. If not, you can at least change the targets. Why don't you hit your wedges at a different distance in a different direction on each shot? And then you're preparing, of course, we call a simulated practice, and you're preparing for on-course play. It does make sense, doesn't it? We might miss some shots on the range, yeah, because we call it no-repeat practice. You don't get to repeat the shot, because much like, of course, when we play. So we practice this way, simulated, then we're giving ourselves the better chance, you know, to play more productively and more efficiently when we walk to the first tee.
I get the sense that you're suggesting that I could be far more productive in my practice session with one small bucket of 30 balls than I can with four buckets and walking out with 120 to 200 balls, which I've seen people do. They'll just come out with multiple buckets, pile on the balls, and pound away.
Well, yeah, and we'd like to use those tailor-made drivers, you know, and get a white driver, and then you can get 20 more yards. And so we pound away at those. And but if we go to a PGA Tour event and watch the players practice, and you'll see much more creativity. Now, these people are really good, of course, and I don't expect you, the people that are listening to this, or you, Fred, to be able to hit shots, you know, like Charlie Wee can hit. But I know this. We can practice in a similar way that he does, so we're, you know, preparing ourselves for practice. Now, there's really three ways to practice, and one is the one that people typically do. They hit one 7-iron after another, you know, working on some technique in their swing, and what are they doing? They're getting ready for the 7-iron tournament, and I'm not sure when that is, but possibly it's scheduled next week sometime. And unfortunately, this is the way most people practice. And it has an honored place. If you're going to learn a new skill and you're working with your teacher, you really do have to repeat one swing after another, and so you can practice this new technique. But the other game, the other way to practice, of course, is to practice simulated practice, which I've already described.
Yeah.
Then there's another way to practice. You know, on the cover of our book and the theme in the book is the perfect swing is the one you trust. We can practice trusting our swings as well. There are really three ways to practice. One, practice your technique. Two, practice like you play. And three, practicing, you know, using and learning to trust the swing that you have.
It's becoming clear to me in what you're saying. And so if I'm going to be on the practice tee with my 7-iron and I insist on hitting ball after ball after ball with that 7-iron, if I'm going to do it that way, I should have a teacher with me because I really can't teach myself anything. Or if I'm going to hit ball after ball after ball with that same club, that I should change the target with every, and not just My 7-iron's about 145 yards. So I shouldn't just try to hit 145 yards every single time, but I should try to hit one 90 yards, or I should try to hit one low and let it bounce. I mean, just varying that shot with that club would probably be more productive than just trying to hit the perfect shot every time.
Yeah, you described use some variations with your 7-iron. We call it hitting off-speed shots, hitting shaping shots with your change target each time. Then we can also throw in, we call it inner game practices. We can hit shots with your eyes closed. Take your 7-iron and hit your 7-iron 145 yards, and then let's take our 6-iron, 5-iron, 4-iron, 3-iron, 3-wood, driver. Let's hit them all 145 yards. You know, practicing rhythm and tempo of your swing is a great way to, another way to practice. Yes, there's a variety of things that we can do, you know, on the practice tee that we call first, you know, it's a game for the first shot. And first shot practice. What you described is one of the things we can do, and what I added to that is something else we can do too, so we can move ourselves more and more to what we call the automatic play. We're playing without thinking, and so that we can play with, when we say playing without thinking, we're saying playing, you know, getting access to the part of our brain that has rhythm, that feels the rhythm, feels the tempo, sees the shots, hears the sound, here and the touch, and what it feels like, you know, when the club hits the ball and goes through the grass. It's playing in our imagination.
And are there strategies or that you have for us to get to that point? The ways that we can develop that?
Yeah, in the last part of the book, in our second edition, we have a number of drills that people can use, you know, to practice, you know, trusting your swing and practice, you know, simulation, you know, of simulation of competition situations. And I would certainly encourage people, you know, to look at that, you know, look in the book and look at those practice principles, descriptions of ways in which you can practice, that you can build, you know, this trust for your swing to be able, you know, to swing without thinking. Yes, there's certain ways you can practice to accomplish that.
I'm kind of dumbfounded here because I just suggested possibly hitting a 7-iron different distances, but I even love, I love even more the idea of taking each club and trying to hit it the same, going after the same distance. And then I think about the times that I'm out there and I see people who they only have a couple swings before their round, and the first thing they'll do is pull out their driver. The first couple swings, they'll just pull out their driver and smack it as hard as they can. But you suggested starting with the wedges first and easing up to it?
Well, you know, people do different things. Most people start with the wedges and ease up.
They should.
I have players that take the driver first and get rhythm with the driver, and then they're moving on down. The main thing is when we're practicing in this way is that we must have to change that. For example, one of the neat things to do, say you're going to play tomorrow, so you get on the golf course, and how should I warm up for this? Well, maybe I'll play the first four holes on range, hit my tee shot, since I'm familiar with the course, I know what my next shot will be. And if I get the ball on the green, then I move to the next tee. And if I miss the shot, then I hit a chip shot. So playing, you know, play the course on a range is one of the ways to prepare ourselves for playing. So it's another way to practice as well. Or I really like take your wedges out and have your three wedges out or four or whatever you have. I'm going to hit a ball in a different direction and a different distance on every single shot. And every shot will be a par swing because, you know, we have a lot of wedge shots.
Yeah.
And practicing the wedges in this way gives us more distance control. And it also causes us to really use our eyes and our visual perceptions and in allowing the swing to match this distance that we see. It's amazing how much progress you can make with your wedges and distance control if you practice in this way.
I need to pause for just a moment because this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than
100,000
downloadable titles across all types of literature, including audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. I looked up Winning the Battle Within and your book, and we'll talk where we can find it, but it's not available as an audiobook yet, Glenn. But do you have any assigned reading that you can give us that maybe we can listen to on an audiobook and get a book for free if we sign up at audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter?
Well, in a book that I become very fascinated with, it's called Talent is Overrated. And you told me here previously, Fred, if talent overrated, is something about what elite athletes do, what is the rest of that title?
Talent is Overrated, What Really Separates World-Class Performers from Everybody Else, by Jeff Colvin.
It's a great, great read for all of us, no matter what performance you're in. And the summary of it, I would say, is this: talent is really not overrated, but practice is underrated. If there's a common denominator among people who steadily improve, I don't care what it is they do, and we're talking about golf here, is they practice. And they find out first, we call it smart practice. So that's a nice play on words, isn't it, today? Smart practice first.
Thank you very much. Good plug.
and then you can increase the intensity and duration. And it's told, quite, how do I find out how smart, what is smart practice? Well, you can read Winning the Battle Within, and you can certainly find out. But the most important thing there about practice is what talent is overrated and et cetera. It's really not. And they talk an awful lot in here about various groups of people across many domains, sport included, that finding out the ways in which to practice. And there's this great debate that goes on, across the internet these days, relative to what is it? Is it talent or is it practice? And I'm suggesting that it's both, but I'm heavily lean towards practicing in the right way, so you can steadily improve. And I know that you'll learn skills quicker and more efficiently. I know you'll be able to play more consistently if you really find out the right ways to practice.
Go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
No, that's that was the end of that statement.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a great recommendation. The unabridged version of Talent is Overrated, What Really Separates World-Class Performers from Everybody Else, is available on audible.com, and you can get it for free just by going to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter, sign up for an account, and the first choice is free. And you can choose anything you'd like other than Glenn's recommendation. And they have over
100,000
titles. Check it out. audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. I before we move on, I want to share, since we're talking about authors, you have a phenomenal golf book story because of where you grew up and whom you grew up with. Please share that with everybody.
Well, Golf in the Kingdom.
Golf was most popular golf book in history, right?
Yeah. Golf, 1973. Yeah, Golf in the Kingdom. Michael Murphy, a great friend, grew up together in Salinas. Didn't see him for about 15 years, read the book. Now I was teaching sports psychology at the University of Pacific, and Golf in the Kingdom became the Bible and the cutting edge for a great, wonderful group of applied sports psychologists. He was the first person that suggested to us there's another way to approach this game so we can have more enjoyment and to shoot lower scores. And then Michael, of course, is a co-founder of Esalen Institute on the coast. And I spent many, many times there before it was really Esalen Institute. And, of course, I have, you know, in the recent years as well. But Gulf of the Kingdom is just, it's really at the cutting edge of applied sports psychology. And I would say most of the leading sports psychologists in the country have a tattered and well-documented copy of that on the bookshelf.
I think everybody has a well-read version of Golf in the Kingdom if they ever played golf, and if they haven't, get started. You're right, it really is kind of like the Bible. But I'm fascinated, who was Michael Murphy before he was Michael Murphy, you know, before he came famous with this book? What was he, what kind of kid was he growing up?
Well, he was president of the student body at Salinas High School.
Oh, really?
He played a lead in the senior play. He was a year ahead of me in school. He's, you know, from a family that was closely associated with John Steinbeck, you know, the great writer. His father and John Steinbeck were buddies. I think that's maybe part of his writing. He... we think the book The East of Eden, written by John Steinbeck, was Cain and Abel, the two brothers, were Michael Murphy and Dennis Murphy. Michael was a good guy across all those domains. Then he disappeared for about 10 years as he was studying, you know, chasing the philosophy of life in India and everywhere, which is well chronicled in the book Golf in the Kingdom. And... he's just an amazing contribution to society. Here's another little interesting one. 6 years ago, he called me and he said, you and me and Bill Walsh, who is a great friend of mine, and another friend of mine here, Larry Meredith, we're going to meet next week and we're going to plan the next 25 years of our life. And we're all 70 at the time. So we did have that meeting. That was about a year before Bill died. So it was kind of interesting. And I think he's still moving ahead and forging ahead as he keeps finding new ways to do old things and finding new ways to do new things.
Oh, that's so special. And it must have been very hard for all of you when Bill passed. It was hard just as a Bay Area resident sports fan. It was very hard for me, but I can imagine... losing a friend like that.
He was obviously quite a guy and quite a coach. And we were friends for a long time. And he had the uncanny ability, you know, moving from Michael to Bill, both icons and tremendous contribution to their professions and to living. But when I was with Bill, I knew him as his best friend. And I also knew that he had other best friends.
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy he was.
Yeah, I mean, it's rare when anybody gets to come in contact with someone who has such a significant impact on anything, let alone two people who are friends that had significant impact, one on football, and it changed the face of how football was ever played, and then golf, how golf was approached. For you to have both of those people in your life, that's pretty remarkable. It's just so great to talk to you. It's like feeling like I've brushed up against that at all.
Well, the thing that we learn, and I have it quite often in my book, is the things that we learn from Bill Walsh regarding practice. And one of the simple things that he would say, not simple, he called it contingency practice. And for players I work with now that are, you know, going into qualifying school or, you know, really, really diligently committed to improving, is that we're going into a competition. If you're ever surprised, that Bill would say, you're not prepared. So you have to be ready for every possible thing. Do you know how to hit a ball out of a divot? Are you prepared for feeling different emotionally when you get into this pressure-packed competition? So Bill would say that you must be ready for everything. And certainly golfers need to be, too. The things that we talked about, Fred, earlier today about practice are getting us prepared for anything that might occur when we're out on the golf course. I don't care if you're you know, a 16.7 index or playing in Las Vegas is weak, that we must be prepared for things that happen. And so the manner in which we practice helps us in that preparation.
Contingency practice. And he was referring to football at the time when he talked about it, wasn't he?
Yeah, you have to be ready for, you know, if there's 4 seconds to go in the game, do you have a play? Do you have a play that you practiced?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so in golf, okay, you short-sighted yourself, and you got to lob it. Do you have a lob shot? No, I don't. Well, maybe that's something I need to practice then, so that when I'm in this situation, I'll be able to pop it over the bunker, you know. And of course, another thing there, too, if you don't have a lob shot, please don't try it.
Well, I remember, I don't remember who it was that said it, but I was doing an interview for Golf Smarter where somebody commented, and this was a couple years ago before all the the problems happened, but he said that Tiger Woods had no ego, and I was kind of shocked. I didn't understand what he meant. He said because Tiger Woods will never take a shot in competition that he hasn't practiced 1,000 times.
Well, I don't know if that had anything to do with his ego.
Right. Well, he had no ego on the golf course is what he meant to say.
Yeah. Okay, I understand that. What we say is this, that, you know, when we're in your pre-shot routine, which is a subject for our next podcast, is that when we develop a strategy, you must pick a strategy that fits your game, fits the situation, and one you can totally commit to. So, Fred, if you haven't hit a cut shot in about a month, please don't try it out here. Or go back to that lob shot, you know, and so if you don't have a lob shot and you have a tight lie, just get it on a green, hit something, and you might have a 30-footer, but it's a lot better than trying to do something you don't know how to do. And say you're in the trees, and instead of attempting a miracle shot, just punch it out on the fairway. In other words, do something you can do. And one of my players I worked with for a long time, Kirk Triplett, says, conservative strategy and aggressive swing. And so, yes, only do what you're prepared to do. Yes, and prepare yourself to do as many things as you can. How's that for an anomaly?
Oh, I'm writing it down because that's, here we go back with another one of my bumper stickers, conservative strategy, aggressive swing.
Yeah,
I love it. And when you talk about contingency practice, when my younger son was wrestling in high school, his coach emphasized that they should never celebrate after a victory, and he was adamant about this, and he always said, act like you've been there before, you know, because if you celebrate, it's like you're pretending like, oh, it's my first time ever. And that's why it's so surprising to see NFL players celebrate when they get in the end zone and being penalized for it. But if you act like you've been there before, you're not exposing yourself to the competition, but also you're not getting out of your game where you should be anyway.
Yeah, it's an interesting part of the culture that I don't find pleasing,
yeah.
You know, but players seem to want to celebrate. They make a sack, and their team's behind 28-0, and they're prancing around because they made a sack.
or stealing second base with an 8-run lead. Don't
okay,
do that.
That's a good one, too.
Yeah.
Right?
In the last few minutes that we have, I'd love for you, you sent me a number of writings before to prepare for this conversation today. And if you could please give me a couple minutes about the writer and the golfer, just this line alone, your best golf is played in imaginative paragraphs.
Yeah, you know.
Can you flesh that out for me a little bit?
Well, I will. When I wrote that piece, actually, I had written it for Scott McKern, and I was there was a really good friend of mine who's a really good writer, and it was really a true story. He had written this piece and sent it in, and it was turned down. And he knew it was really good, and he knew it was an A-caliber piece, and he just had to tweak it. and he had to get back and go to his mentors and his editors and make some small changes. But I knew that he was going to resubmit it, and we were going to get a chance to read it. And sometimes in golf, you know, it's not quite working. You know, it's not quite working. And you know, we're working really hard on it. We're working with our teachers, and we're working on our technique. We're working on our practices, and it's not quite there. Maybe it takes a little bit of tweaking. And then when it gets to the point that the creative writers tell me that they don't write sentences, they write paragraphs, and they write pages, and it comes out in a big burst. And so the same is for golfers. They don't play in sentences. They don't play in that thinking brain we talked about at the top of the show. But they play in that part of the brain that moves in paragraphs and moves in imagination and intuition and creativity. And then when you can finally get there, you know, and play in paragraphs, you're certainly playing in this place where you can really trust the swing you have. It takes a little time sometimes to get there, but you got to get there. And when you get there, it's a beautiful piece that you've written, and it's a beautiful piece that you play. That's it.
That's beautiful in itself. That was great. Thank you. The book is called Winning the Battle Within by Dr. Glenn Albaugh. The perfect swing is the one you trust. Glenn, I really appreciate you coming back. I hope you're shooting your age, and I wish you strength and good health for years and years to come.
Thank you. I am shooting my age, so that's good.
That's great.
Thank you, Fred.
Hey, look, this ain't no Cyber Tuesday hack job, but if you're thinking about putting some new clubs on your holiday wish list, I want you to put a high priority on cutting down on those very costly strokes, the ones inside 150 yards. You can choose up to a six-wedge set, one wedge, two, four, five, six, whatever you want, but they're customized clubs made by Score Golf. Every angle from 41 to 61 degrees, and it's designed specifically for what you play, what kind of clubs you play, and your game. As a Golf Smarter listener, you get 10% off by using the checkout code GOLFSMARTER11. Golf Smarter members get a full 15% off. Now, whether you order online or on the phone, just make sure they know that you heard about this generous deal on Golf Smarter. Now, if you're not completely satisfied, they offer a 100% money-back guarantee. Full refund. I've already noticed a difference in my short game, so check it out for yourself. For more information and to get all your questions answered, just click on the Score Golf banner at the bottom of the homepage at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.